The Small Back Room, adapted for radio by Peter Watts, from the novel by Nigel Balchin. The Small Back Room.
Even before the war, my foot was hurting all the time, so they took it off and gave me an aluminium one. Now, that only hurt about three quarters of the time. It struck a bad patch in the car coming back from the testing grounds. I tried kicking my shin with the heel of my other foot. That sometimes helped, but Colonel Holland glared, so I stopped. He let out a loud snort and said...
Now, I suppose your people will send in a report saying that Reeves' gun's a marvelous weapon.
You don't like the Reeves?
I think it's a useless contraption. Well, tanks move, don't they? They zigzag. The type of chap we've got to use wouldn't get one in those sights in a week. I never quite understand about your outfit, Rice. What do you call yourselves?
We're just Professor Mayer's research group.
And what's his name? What's he?
You mean Waring?
Yes. Mayer's second, eh?
Well.
Or reckons he is, anyhow.
Well, I suppose in practice he is, yes. Rob Waring's a very capable bloke.
I can well believe it. I think he's capable of anything.
It was nearly 6 o'clock when I got in. Till was poking away at his calculating machine with his glasses up on his forehead.
Here's an extraordinary thing, Sammy. You know those penetration figures?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a positive correlation between penetration and the height of the man firing.
No, easy. The taller the man, the more rarefied the atmosphere. If they hadn't all been lying down when they fired. Now, what is the correlation? About 0.01?
No. It's about 0.09.
Oh, well, that's lower than the correlation you found between Roman Catholicism and weightlifting ability. So I wouldn't let it worry you too much.
It's a very odd thing, anyhow.
I went into Waring's room. He wasn't there. Neither was any of his furniture. There was just Susan, looking rather lonely at a typing desk in one corner.
Hello. All on your own? What's happened to Waring?
Gone into the inner room.
Ho-ho-ho-ho. Impossible to pass without stating your business to his secretary.
Mm-hmm. Back to carpet, too.
Oh, well. Is he in?
No, he's just gone to see the minister with the old man.
Oh.
Oh, for the love of Mike, sit down, Sammy. You look tired.
I am. Dead tired.
Foot all right?
Fairish.
Look, darling, why not go home and have some of your stuff? I shan't be long.
I want to tell Waring about the trials of the Reeves.
Is it any good?
I doubt it.
That won't suit Waring. He thinks it's marvellous.
Why?
Well, the old man has told the minister it is, so it must be.
You're very bitter about him today. Has he been bloody to you again?
Oh, he's been sweet. Like having a week's sugar ration in one cup of tea. I think the career must be going well. Why don't you start having a career, Sammy?
I was just trying to think of the answer to that one when the door opened and Waring came in. I felt myself going pretty red. And not a soul in the place knew about Susan and me, but it always felt as though it must stick out a yard. Waring was looking very big and handsome, rather like a film star playing a successful businessman.
Sammy, this is fine. Go on in, make yourself at home. Excuse me, just a moment. Now, 3 copies of that Susan marked most secret, one to the minister, one to Professor Mayer, one for me. There's a note to go to the minister. As quickly as you can, please.
It'll take about 2 hours.
That meant she wouldn't be home till 9.
I'm sorry, but it's a very urgent matter. Right. Now then, Sammy. Why not sit down and be comfortable, hmm? Look, chair. Beautiful, padded, comfortable armchair. Especially for important visitors like you.
Well, you've gone very grand.
Yeah, well, I was getting a bit fed up with prison furniture. Look at that rabbit hutch you and Tilly have. Some of the finest and most valuable stuff in the country comes out of that den. It makes me wild.
Oh, it was nice of you to get yourself this stuff just for my sake.
Go on, you bitter old devil. Now... tell me about the Reeves. Good show, hmm?
I'm afraid old Holland took against it.
He would. Luckily, the thing has been sold above his level.
Sold?
Yes, I made the old man take me around to see the minister. And I put it across to him.
How? On what the stars foretell?
Well, the idea's all right. When are you getting the figures?
Over the next week.
Fine.
It will be if the figures say what we want.
Well, they better, after what I told his nibs.
Well, Holland thinks...
Oh, to blazes with Holland! You're letting metal ribbons impress you, Sammy. I'd back the stuff you and Till turn out against a Boer War medal any day.
I got back to the office and was thinking of going home when Pinker rang up and suggested I met him for a drink. I didn't want to drink, and I didn't much want to talk to Pinker. But I knew Susan wouldn't be home for hours, so I went. He was already there when I arrived, looking as dapper as ever.
Well, how's everything going with the backroom boys? Have we won the war yet? Well,
I don't know. Nobody ever tells me anything.
Well, I believe I've made a substantial contribution today. I think we need a new parliamentary secretary. Higgins is a dear good soul, but there's a war on.
So you're having him kicked out?
Give me time. I'm having a drink with the minister's principal private secretary's cousin tomorrow. I shall drop a little poison into his ears in the normal way, just to get things started. Oh, cheers.
After the second drink, we got on to our outfit.
Yeah, isn't getting ambitious. That was a good outfit of yours when it started.
What's wrong with it now?
Oh, nothing. Do you think Mayor wants a knighthood?
I shouldn't think so.
Well, somebody wants something. Who's the ambitious boy? Waring?
I don't quite understand.
You and Waring get on?
We were at school together.
So are a lot of chaps who hate each other's guts now. Anyway, how are your cloak and dagger developments? Is the Reeves gun any good?
Reeves? How did you...
You know Mayor and Waring saw the minister about it today.
I suppose you were under the table.
I was there in spirit. That's why I asked you who wanted what. Look, you like old Mayor, don't you?
Yes. I'm very fond of him.
Right. Well, then, why don't you look after him? Why do you let that glorified sales manager Waring use him as a stalking horse? Have you ever thought where your outfit would be if there were a change of minister?
Why, are you going to have the minister chucked out, too?
He'll arrange it himself sooner or later. Politicians come and go, and when they go, the people who depended on them tend to take a jolt. Bung-ho.
Cheers. I got home about 8:30. I was very tired, and Pinker's little party hadn't helped much. While I was just sitting there, Susan rang up.
Look, I shall be home in about 30 minutes. I'm bringing some food, so don't do anything. Have you taken your dope?
No, not yet.
Well, take some and sit down quietly. I won't be long.
I went and got my dope, but the wretched stuff never did any good, so I put it back and decided just to let the thing hurt and not do anything about it. After a few minutes, I knew it wouldn't do, so I went and got the whiskey and took a sizable drink. The whiskey didn't stop the thing from hurting either, but at least it left me not caring whether it hurt or not. Eventually, Susan came in.
Have you taken your stuff?
I've taken some of a well-known Scotch remedy.
Oh.
A policy of understanding tolerance will now be adopted.
Well, why shouldn't you have a drink? It's probably the best thing for you.
I seem to have heard that argument before. Look, if I don't have another drink, I shall be filthy to you all the evening. If I do, I shall be slightly drunk but affectionate. You can have it which way you like.
You know quite well you're never filthy to me.
Oh, you're a nice child. Sometimes you're not very helpful. Now go and get the supper while I stare at the whiskey bottle. She went. I put the scotch back in its cupboard. The next morning, I looked into Mayor's room. He was wearing a shirt with a frayed collar and was poking about at a minute bit of one of his trick fuses. He was always mad on fuses, and we did a lot of work on them.
Morning, Sammy.
Just before you settled down, sir, the Reeves trial. I wondered whether we could have a talk about it.
Yes, well, you should talk to Waring about that. He's very keen on it, very keen.
Well, I should like to talk to you about it as well.
Oh, by all means, of course, just whenever you like. Waring's very most enthusiastic. He'll tell you about it.
I gave up and left him to it. A couple of weeks later, I'd been out on the range with Colonel Holland when Waring rang from town. He sounded pretty excited.
Listen, Sammy. The old man wants you to go across to Ribbonham as quick as you can. Contact a Captain Stewart to the police station.
What's all this about?
Oh, Stewart will tell you. I can't talk on the telephone, but it's most important and very urgent.
All right. Is it important enough for me to ask the CO for a car?
Yes, anything you like.
They coughed up a car almost without a struggle, and I was in Ribbonham Police Station by 6. Stewart was a young sapper officer.
Look here, Mr. Rice. I know it's rot, but may I check up on your identity? You see, we don't want to...
Sure. Here you are.
Good. Yes, I'm sorry to bother you, but I don't like to risk anything on this business. Well, what's happened is that a kid's been killed by an explosion.
Found a dart and hit it with a hammer?
No. As far as we can make out, she simply picked it up. Or maybe only touched it.
Well, what was it?
That's just it. We don't know. It's the fourth this week. And always after Jerry Plains have been over.
You mean they're dropping booby traps?
Yes, looks like it.
Always kids?
No, three kids and one man.
No survivors, of course.
The people who've touched the things have been blown to glory. Frightful mess. Now, this time, by some miracle, the kid's little brother wasn't touched. But as he's only three, he isn't a lot of help. He was still badly shaken, but the police say he's much better now. It's only 5 minutes' walk. Shall we go over there?
Oh, good evening, sir.
Oh, good evening, Mrs. Davis. How's Bobby?
He's a lot better. Won't you come in?
Thank you. I hate to bother you, Mrs. Davis, but we must see if he can tell us anything that'll help to...
I did ask him a bit myself, sir, but
yes.
He can't tell me much. He's only just three, you see. He doesn't understand.
No, of course not.
I liked Stuart. I could see he wasn't enjoying himself any more than I was. Mrs. Davis came back, carrying a tow-headed kid in a jersey and torn knickers.
Hello, Bobby.
Hello.
Come to me.
No.
There.
You come to me, Bobby. I've got chocolate. Look.
Oh, say thank you, Bobby.
Thank you.
Now, Bobby, what happened when the thing went bang?
Thing went bang.
Were you and Sheila playing?
She wouldn't play anymore. And she went away and she said, "What I found, Bobby." And went bang.
Did you see what it was she found, Bobby?
What was it like?
In the grass. It was in the grass.
How big was it? As big as this pen? Bigger?
Don't know.
What colour was it, Bobby?
He doesn't know colour, sir. He's only just three, see? I don't think he really saw it. Did you, Bobby? It was just in the grass, and Sheila found it, didn't she?
Went back.
Yes. Did Sheila pick it up?
No.
Sure of that?
Sheila didn't pick it up. She put it down and said, what I found.
Of course, he's not very old, sir. Bobby, tell Mummy, did she pick the nasty thing up?
No. She sat down. She found it.
Show us what she did, Bobby.
She said, "What I found."
Never mind, love. It's all right.
Go and play.
With Blackie?
Hmm.
He says he wants to go and play. Blackie's his kitten.
Yeah, well, so he shall. Thank you very much, Bobby. You've been a real help.
The devil of it is, we don't really know whether she touched it or not. It may be a time fuse.
And the person who found the thing's always been killed before they had time to show it to anyone else. That wouldn't be likely to happen with a time fuse.
Oh, damn. I didn't ask Mrs. Davis if she was carrying metal.
She was wearing a bracelet and she had metal protectors on her shoes.
He was a very competent bloke in a quiet way. I was beginning to like him a lot. He sat for a long time thinking, looking very young and deadly tired. When did you eat last?
Oh, I don't know. This is a snorter, old boy. Any theories?
My guess would be magnetic or trembler.
Yes.
Although it isn't easy to see how a trembler could be made to stand up to dropping from a plane.
Not a lot to go on, is it? Until some more kids are blown to bits. I've seen 4 dead children this week and it's getting me down. Now look, old boy, we've got to get hold of one of these things and quick. Put a cordon round it and then take it apart.
Yeah. That's going to be fun, too. Susan and I always went out on Wednesday night. We were a bit late, but eventually we got a table at the Hickory. After a bit, I said, I know it would be a lot easier in some ways if we were married.
But surely it's for me to decide.
Listen, I'll take things from you with both hands. I always have, and I propose to go on. But one of these days, you're going to get tired of it. And when you do, I want you to be able to put the whole thing in the wastepaper basket and forget it in just 10 seconds.
The trouble with you is that you're a defeatist.
Now, there's nothing defeatist in this. When I get a bad patch, I want somebody to flutter around and tell me that I have a shocking time and that it's too bad, and you like doing that, so there we are.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Well, A, that I don't really have a shocking time. Or if I do, it's my own fault, and we both know it. And B, that fluttering around isn't really your sort of job, and we both know that, too. Oh, I shall now have a drink.
Sammy?
I shall drink, half a pint of bitter beer. This was an old game. She knew I never drank whiskey except at home, but she was always wondering whether I'd start. I don't know why, but I thought it was funny to pull her leg about it. About 3 days later, I got a telegram from Stuart that simply said, Police Station, Clanfaris. But before I could do anything about it, there was another saying, Don't come, grenade. It was just as well, because the figures of the Reeves trials were in, and I was working hard to get the report finished. About 3 o'clock, Waring rang and asked me if I'd come down.
Oh, here, Sammy, this report of yours.
Yes?
Well, you're just knocking the thing for all you're worth. What's the idea?
Knocking it? How?
Well, all this about the time it would take to get into production.
That's perfectly true.
But why on earth bring that in? It's nothing to do with the trials.
Well, am I supposed to give all the facts or some of the facts or my opinions or your opinions or what?
I think that you're supposed to give the facts to Mayor.
Well, that's what I have done. I'd be interested to hear his views on them.
But I don't think it's your job to interpret them. Frankly, Sammy, I don't think you know enough of the background for that, the political stuff.
You think that alters the facts?
No, well, I think it alters the use one makes of them. Suppose the minister is really keen on this.
Is our job to tell the minister the truth or that what he wants to do is right?
I don't think that's a matter for you and me, Sammy. Certainly not for the technical side.
The technical side being me?
That's right, yes. If you want me to be blunt, I think the backroom boys should stick to their job.
Yeah, which is to produce the answer you want, even if we have to fake it.
No, no, no. Now, come on, be reasonable, Sammy. Nobody wants to fake anything. But between ourselves, the old man is rather on his ear about this. He seemed to think you'd you've done it on purpose. You know how he gets these ideas.
I know how he got this one.
What do you mean?
I think you sold him a pup and made him sell it to other people. Now you want me to get you out of the mess. Well, it can't be done.
No, 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 of course not. It's just that the whole thing's a bit tricky, politically speaking.
That's nothing to do with me.
No, of course it isn't. The question is, what are we going to do?
Look, R.B., if Mayor isn't satisfied with that report, he can alter it, but I'm damned if I will. You've never even seen the gun fired.
Well, you can take that line if you like, of course, but you'll find yourself pretty unpopular.
Fine. I'll go and see about it.
Hello, Sammy.
I understand that you don't like my report on the Reeves gun.
The Reeves gun? Oh, yes, yes, yes. Bit disappointing, eh? I hoped it would show up better.
Anything less like a man on his ear I'd never seen. A Waring thinks you'll want the report altered.
Oh? Well, look, Waring can put you in the picture. I'll tell you what, we might get him in and talk about it.
We sat in silence till he came. Waring didn't look at me.
Rob, the Reeves report, what's the position?
You thought it was too destructive in view of what the minister told us.
Oh, yes. It needs careful handling.
Will that alter the rate of fire or the penetration?
No, it's...
Dr. James is here, Professor Mayor.
Oh, good Lord. Is it as late as that? All right, show Dr. James in. Look, talk this over together, you two, will you? It's very good and clear report, Sammy. It's just a matter of presentation in one or two places.
When we got outside, I said, I'll send you down the figures.
Figures?
To write the report. If Mayor wants to tie it up with something you and he have told the minister, one of you must write it. As I don't know what you said, I can't help
it. Oh, Lord, don't get on your dignity, old boy. It's too childish.
The whole thing's childish.
Look, we just don't want the report to damn the thing, or we play right into the hands of people who'd like to see us come a cropper. You know how these scientific boys love one another. Look, come along to my room and I'll show you the bits that are awkward. It won't take 5 minutes.
Nothing doing.
All right, Sammy. If you won't help, you won't. But if we fall down on this, it'll be just about the end of Mayor. Please yourself.
It didn't amount to much, in fact. Finally, I said, look here, R.B., isn't the real answer to cut out the summary and just give the figures? The big boys never look at figures. They wouldn't understand them if they did.
My dear chap, if you're prepared to do that, I've nothing whatever to say. I don't want to add any noughts, Sammy. Honestly, I don't.
Well, if you want to save the old man's face that way. And personally, I think he was more use in the days when his face didn't matter. I knew Susan wouldn't be home till after 8. And going home by myself, a feeling like that, was asking for it. I ran and told her to pick me up at the Royal. When I got there, the first thing I saw was Pinker and Joe hobnobbing at a table. I hadn't even known they knew one another. Pinker waved, so I went over. I thought Joe looked a bit guilty, like a sheepdog that's been caught doing something.
What ho? We've just been talking about you.
Uh-huh.
Well, I was... Have a drink. What's the latest dirt from the scientific front? Marchant here seems to think...
Well, I
only... Oh, Joe's always looking for trouble.
It sounds to me as though you'll find it without much looking. That boy Waring is riding for a fall.
Well, look here, I've got to go. Cheerio, everybody.
Bye,
cheerio.
Joe.
That boy any good?
Hmm? Oh, he's all right.
Should have his hair cut. Look here, Rice. Do you know Sir Lewis Easton?
Yes, I know of him.
Easton's very powerful. He's in on this Reeves gun thing.
How?
I think he and Mayor have had a row about it.
Well, what does Easton know about it?
For that matter, what does Mayor?
Well, Mayor knows the facts.
Does he? Does Waring let him see them? If you're not careful, Waring's bluff is going to be called, and Mayor's backed it.
Mayor's got the minister in his pocket.
Maybe. But Easton's got a bigger card than the minister. You ought to meet Easton. He's a good chap. I think you two might have quite a lot to say to each other. He doesn't like Waring.
Oh, Lord, it's no good dragging people in just because they don't like Waring. Now, we can do that by ourselves. I didn't like the sound of it at all. Then Susan turned up. Pinker went through the proper polite motions for a few minutes and then left us. Susan said,
has anything rotten happened, darling? Or is it your foot?
It's a mixture of the two.
Can you talk about it?
No, I don't think so. Look, I'm sorry. I must have a proper drink.
Hadn't we better go home, then? You've got plenty there.
I don't want it at home. I want it here. You push off, sweet. I'll be all right.
Come on, home. Much nicer, really.
I got up and followed her out. When we got home, Susan said,
now, food. And after that, tell me about today.
I was promised a drink.
Well, you can have your drink, darling. Or how about some of your dope, if it's bad?
Ask me to have a drink, woman.
Would you care for a drink, Sammy?
A whiskey?
Yes.
No, thank you, Susan. I'll have some of my nice medicine.
Oh, Sammy.
Here.
Oh, take the wretched thing off. You know that helps.
I don't like it.
You take it off when you're by yourself. Why will you always keep it on when I'm here?
Well, it is. It's all right now. Honest it is. Go and get the supper. The next night, my young brother turned up. He was at the flat when I got back. He was rather a prized specimen. Big and handsome. They'd already given him the DFC, and now he'd come up to claim the bar to it. I never saw how they got him into the cockpit of a fighter. Susan was sitting curled up and showing a lot of leg. I saw the kid looking, and I wondered how that side of things was going. You're not married by any chance?
No, no, just semi-detached. Like to see a photo of the latest model. Name is Sylvia. We're sort of engaged.
Uh-huh. What sort of? A ring?
Oh, she's got my signet ring.
I think that damn thing's merely worn out by now.
Well, I'm not set such a good example, am I? Poor Susan, hitting a typewriter and living with you. What a life for a girl with legs like that.
For goodness sake, pull your frock down, Sue.
Mean monkey.
He always said that when I wouldn't give him something of mine. Then, just before 10 o'clock, he said...
Look, I have to go soon.
Sammy, why don't you go down with him and have a drink in the pub?
Jolly good idea.
Dick put on his overcoat. He looked really huge.
Goodbye, Dick, dear.
Bye, Susan. Ah, that in your eye, Sammy. I like kissing this girl, Susan, of yours. If she were around, I should kiss her a lot.
You go and kiss your own women, you big cheese. We got into the pub and ordered pints. Dick was rubbing the end of his nose, so I knew something was coming. Well, cough it up and be clear, old man.
Look, Sammy, this new job they're putting me on to...
Well?
Well, of course, I can't talk, but... Well, I should think I stand a pretty good chance of being a complete write-off.
Oh, what you've been doing isn't exactly the safest job.
No, no, but this is different somehow. Mind you, it sounds darn good fun. But, well, this young woman now, Sylvia... Here's a letter for her if anything goes wrong.
Yes.
For goodness sake, don't give her that till you're sure, Sammy. I shall look an awful fool.
Look, Dick.
Now, that girl Susan of yours, that's a nice girl. Why don't you marry her?
Well, I'm not a very good proposition for anybody to marry.
I don't know. Women have funny tastes.
Well, I'm not keen to be anybody's funny taste.
Look, Sammy, this foot of yours... It's bad luck, but it doesn't matter, you know.
No, of course it doesn't.
And that girl of yours. I mean, she knows.
Well, she ought to, poor old Sue.
Well, what I mean is, don't let her get on top of you.
No, I won't.
Well, that's all right then. But honestly, don't.
They turned us out of the pub at 10:30. I walked along to the tube with him and watched him go down the escalator out of sight. The next day, Waring suddenly said...
Sammy, I met Marchant coming in at about 10:30 this morning. Does that boy do anything?
Oh, Joe's not bad. He can do very good work when he likes.
And does he ever like?
Sometimes. He did a very good job. I was wet through with sweat, and the wind made me shiver. After about 100 yards, I heard somebody running behind me. It was Susan.
I did try to ring up, but there's something wrong with the line.
Oh, the hell with the line.
You hadn't drunk any after all.
No, I haven't drunk any after all.
Oh, tell me where you're going, Sammy.
I don't know.
A woman?
Maybe.
Well, how about me?
All right. Nothing else in sight, so I suppose you'll do. Come and have a drink. I've just walked out on the slut I live with.
Why?
Well, you see, I drink more whiskey than I should, yet she left me to sit and look at the bottle and sweat.
Oh, I know, I know. I'm a useless cow, darling.
So when she did come in, I swept out.
So I should think.
And it appears that she tried to ring me up and couldn't, so I can't even have the satisfaction of being annoyed. As a matter of fact, Sue, it wasn't too bad an effort. I couldn't have done it a few months ago.
Look, are you having me back now? I mean, you haven't left me or anything.
No. I never had much. Just that I wanted to get out of that room.
You had left me quite a bit, I think.
Well, I had to have somebody to go for, darling.
Lord, that was a nasty journey home. I had 3 shots at ringing up and got number unobtainable every time. Then I just bolted for it. I still hadn't actually finished.
It's about time an ultimatum was presented to Waring that you like to get home before midnight now and again. Oh, Lord.
What?
I cooked the supper and it's still in the oven. Oh. The next thing I heard from Stewart was a telegram just as I was leaving the office one night. It said, Number 14, General Hospital, Cloathlon. Urgent. Stewart looked absolutely all in.
Hello, Rice.
Another kid?
No, thank heaven. It's a soldier. Gunner. Not that that makes it much better.
Is he badly hurt?
Oh, Lord, yes. The only wonder is he's still living.
But can he tell you anything?
Oh, when he's conscious. It was about 2 minutes last night when he could talk quite sensibly. But since then, he's been right under.
You sat up with him all night?
Yes. Yeah. Is there anything to do? Come inside.
There was a screen round the only bed in the room. Stewart nodded to the nurse and she got up and went out. You could only see half the gunner's face, and that looked like wax, even his lips. The rest was bandages. He looked a very small man. How much has he told you?
Well, he was walking up on the golf course with another chap from his battery. And the thing was lying in a bunker. A cylinder, just over a foot long and 2 inches in diameter. At least that's what I made of it. He said it looked like a big electric torch, even down to the cap on the end.
Ah. But did they pick it up?
His pal did. This boy wanted to leave it alone and report it, but his pal was afraid they'd be laughed at. Now, being gunners, they knew that most things don't blow up unless you knock them about or arm the fuse or something. So they decided to carry it back to camp. This boy's pal lifted the thing, and up she went.
Immediately?
Well, he went under again before I could ask.
The other chap was killed.
Oh, yeah.
Splinters?
A few, nothing to help much.
Look here, you're dead tired. Why not get a bit of sleep? I'll stay with him.
No, I'd rather stay now. I'd rather stay now. I'm quite all right. Look, Rice, I went to sleep last night.
You mean while you
were... Yes. I told the fool of a nurse to wake me if she saw me dropping off, but she didn't. When I woke up, his eyes were open. He may have been conscious for a long time.
I don't expect he had
been. Yes, but supposing he was... He might have wanted to tell me something. When I woke up, he was looking at me.
And he went under again?
Yes. It was a matter of seconds.
The doctor came back about 2 o'clock. And while he was looking at the gunner, he suddenly said...
You are Stewart. Quickly.
Right. Look, old man. Did Bob pick it up? I tried to tell us... It's very important. Did Bob pick it up, old man?
I'm afraid it's no good.
Look, Doctor, can I do any harm now?
No. No, I suppose not.
Right. Peterson, open your eyes and listen to me. Did Roberts pick that thing up, or did he not? Tell me, did Roberts pick it up?
Yes.
He did. By the end or by the middle? By the end or by the middle?
Stewart was leaning forward. The sweat was standing on his forehead. The boy's lips moved and he breathed something. I think it was sir. His eye was still half open, but you couldn't see anything but white now.
I can't feel any pulse now. I think that's that.
Yes. You did get something of what you wanted.
Excuse me a minute.
Go and see he's all right, old man. He's had enough.
I got back to the office at 4 and stepped right into the middle of it.
Sammy, where have you been? I've been trying to get you all day. Get the stuff and let's push off right away.
What stuff?
The Reeves gun figures. Hasn't Martin told you? There's a big meeting about the Reeves at 4:30 at Gloucester House.
Who's coming?
Oh, the whole crowd. Yes, apparently both Lewis Easton and the soldiers have been shooting at it. And the ministers told Jake Gladwin to hold a roundtable conference on it to tell all parties where they get off. You're the evidence for the prosecution.
Is the old man going?
Yes, rather. I told him it's time he stopped not speaking to Easton and started to be rude to him instead.
Look, you do realize, don't you, the Reeves is a damn good idea, but as it stands, it isn't a damn good gun.
Oh, to places with that. The minister's sold. Gladwin knows what answer he's got to get. Look, this party is just a bump off Easton and Company. Now, nip and get your stuff, Sammy. We can talk about it in the cab.
We were a bit late. And about a dozen people had turned up already and were standing about talking. There was Colonel Holland and about half a dozen of Gladwin's people from the ministry, and Lewis Easton, looking like an indignant cod, talking to a big man with black hair and a blue chin. The conversation died down as we came in. Well, you didn't have to be very sensitive to know that there were a good many guns pointing our way. Waring didn't seem to notice. After a few minutes, Gladwin and Mayer arrived together. Gladwin was a big man with a fat white face that was always sweating slightly. He dived into the chair at the head of the table as though he were playing musical chairs.
Well, gentlemen, let's get started. Gentlemen, I have called this meeting on the minister's instructions to clear up the position about the Reeves gun. There have been extensive demonstrations and experiments. The question now is, what have these experiments shown, and what are we going to do about it? Now, you talk and I'll listen. I believe Professor Mayer has been interested in these experiments. Perhaps he'll give us his conclusions.
Well, in a few words, Mr. Chairman, I should say that the Reeves gun is one of the most promising developments I've seen. But that's only an opinion, and I should prefer to hear other people before being too dogmatic.
Well, frankly, Mr. Chairman, we don't like the Reeves.
You don't, Colonel Holland?
As he must have known they'd been fighting it tooth and nail for weeks, I thought he did pretty well to sound surprised.
It has a lot of snags from the user point of view, and we don't think it has sufficient advantages to offset them.
Well, of course, that's the question. Yes, Easton?
It might possibly be of interest to the meeting, Mr. Chairman, to hear the views of the National Scientific Advisory Council, of which I have the honor to be chairman.
Please.
The National Scientific Advisory Council appointed a special subcommittee to examine and report on the Reeves gun. I suggest that Dr. Brine here, as convener of this subcommittee, should give his views.
Please, Dr. Brine.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my colleagues and I approached this matter purely as scientists.
He said it as though everyone else had approached it as income tax inspectors or jobbing gardeners.
Scientifically speaking, it was not a sound concept. In fact, I'll go further and say that no scientist could feel happy about many of the principles involved.
The old man's bottom lip was beginning to stick out. That meant he was pretty angry. I scribbled on a bit of paper, "Ask if the subcommittee saw the gun fired," and passed it to him.
Exactly what scientific principles did you think were unsound?
We're talking about different sorts of principles, Professor Mayer. We didn't like it because it had user snags. Dr. Brine is talking about principles of physics or something like that.
Well, Colonel Holland, first, what didn't Dr. Brine's subcommittee like? Perhaps first he could tell us who were his colleagues.
The subcommittee consisted of Professor Char, Dr. Golda, Dr. Peace, and myself.
Ah, one crystallographer, one vital statistician, one embryologist, and one...
It couldn't have been more beautifully done if he'd slapped his face.
Dr. Brine is, of course, one of the best-known organic chemists in this country.
Well, now we've got that straight. By the way, you did see the gun firing, I take it.
Well, we were not actually present at the trial.
No, but you did see the gun fire. You didn't just look at it as a piece of furniture.
We did not see it firing.
Oh, well, never mind. Can we get back to what the committee didn't like?
It was very pretty. The wretched Brian started off, but no one was going to accept him as evidence after that. So far, the old man had the meeting cold. Then old Holland looked up and said,
"Mr. Chairman, Professor Mayer may be quite right in saying that it's a grand idea scientifically, but what we're interested in is whether it's a good gun as it stands."
This was just the line I wanted to avoid. I glanced at Mayer, but by that time he had his tail well up and he went in head first.
"Well, now, surely that's a matter of fact. We've had experiments and trials. Perhaps, Mr. Chairman, you'd allow Mr. Rice of my staff to give us the facts."
"Please."
I took the papers out of my bag. I knew the stuff by heart, but it gave me time to think. It suddenly struck me that it probably wouldn't mean anything to the meeting because nobody but Gladwin's boys would know the comparative figures for other weapons. I just started to read out the figures rather quickly. When I finished, there was a silence. Then old Holland suddenly said,
"That's fine, Mr. Chairman, but now may I ask Mr. Rice what it all adds up to?"
"I hardly think that's for me to say, Colonel. I was merely giving the results of the trial."
"And on these results, you think the Reeves is the first-rate weapon, eh?"
"I think Professor Mayer's already given the view of the section."
"And you share that view?"
"Oh, come, that's scarcely a fair question, is it?"
"Why not, Mr. Waring?"
"Well, Mr. Chairman, if Colonel Holland expressed the view, he'd hardly expect us to ask one of his junior officers if he agreed."
Quite. I don't think you can ask Rice to argue with his chief, Holland."
"Mr. Chairman, we're told that Mr. Rice's figures show that we're wrong. But surely I'm entitled to ask him what his figures mean. If the Reeves gun is accepted, sooner or later, men have got to fight with it. If we've been too optimistic or anything has been glossed over, they'll be the sufferers. We shan't."
"Well, well, Mr. Chairman, nobody wants to hide anything. If Colonel Holland would like Mr. Rice's views, I have no objection at all."
"Well, Mr. Rice,
I agree with Professor Mayer that the idea is excellent."
"And the weapon?"
"I don't think it's right yet."
"Would you be happy to see it accepted in its present form on these figures?"
"No, I wouldn't."
"Thank you. That's all I wanted to know."
I think it's rather important, Mr. Chairman, that it should be realized that what Mr. Rice has given is purely a technician's view."
"Quite. The position's quite understood."
I looked round the table. It was understood, all right. About a week after the meeting, Pinker came into the office.
"I've got a bit of news for you. The minister's on his way out."
"Our minister?"
"It'll be announced tomorrow."
"Who are we getting?"
"Pedder."
"Oh, good Lord.
What do you think the effect of this will be on your outfit?"
"Now, perhaps they'll just shut us down. As far as I can see, plenty of people would be glad enough."
"I think there'll probably be certain changes."
"Such as what?"
"Well, personally, I shouldn't be surprised if old Pedder started asking, why Mayor?"
"Because Mayor's about 500% better than anyone else."
"Waring shouldn't have let him play politics. If Mayor did go, I think Waring's got across too many people."
"If Mayor went and Waring went, they might as well shut us down."
"Well, is that quite true? They say Mayor messes about with fuses and acts as figurehead, that Waring does the talking, and that you do the work. That's why I want you to see Easton. He's a very powerful man. What's more, he's a buddy of Pedder's."
"I shouldn't think the contact I've had with Easton so far would have done me any good."
"Oh, you're wrong. He was particularly impressed by your performance at the Reeves meeting."
"Who will they want to put in instead of Mayor?"
"I should guess a chap named Brian."
"Oh.
I think Easton's been grooming him for the job for a long time."
"Brian couldn't look at Mayor's job."
"He could, with you helping him."
"But why should I? Mayor's good, and he's straight."
"Oh, I dare say. Good husband and father. Admirable scientist, for all I know. It's no good being sentimental about these things."
"Sentimental, my boot. It so happens that I like Mayor and I don't like Easton or Brian, that's all."
"Damn liking them. It's the job that matters."
"All right, then it so happens that I think Easton and Brian and company aren't in Mayor's class."
"Well, as I say, it's nothing to do with me. All this is quite off the record, of course. I mean, I don't want any of it to get round to Mayor or Waring."
I couldn't settle down at all. And about tea time, I rang Susan and suggested that we should go out to supper. She didn't want to go to the Royal, so we went to Noble's instead. Susan turned up looking worried.
"Look, Sammy, do you know anything about this business that I don't?"
"Well, yes, up to a point." I told her what Pinker had said.
"Pinker hadn't told Waring?"
"No. In fact, he made me promise not to tell him. Pinker can't bear Waring.
Sammy, there's dirty work. Pinker rang Waring this afternoon and they've gone out this evening. What? That's why I suggested here instead of the Royal.
Yeah, but they don't...
Oh, be your age. It's perfectly obvious they want to get rid of Mare. They won't have someone left to run the show. Well, Pinker tried you and you wouldn't play. So now he'll try Waring. And of course he will.
But Waring told me at lunchtime he'd go if the old man went.
He might if they flung him down the steps. It's an awful pity you let Pinker think you were tied to Mare.
But darling, you can hardly expect me to come in with a cove like Pinker in doing the old man dirt.
Well, it's no question of you doing him dirt. If they are going to get rid of him, you can't stop them.
Maybe not, and I even actually help them.
Oh, you really are hopeless, Sammy. They come and more or less offer you the job, and you turn it down. Now they'll go and get someone else, and you won't like it.
You don't know what you're talking about. I wasn't offered anything. Besides, if they put some awful stooge like Brian in, it would be pretty hopeless.
So you'll resign if Mare leaves?
I'm not sure.
Well, I'll tell you. You won't. You'll let all this happen and you'll just hang around hating it, expecting everybody to be sorry for you.
I shan't expect anything of the sort.
Oh, yes, you will. You do this all the time. You put yourself in lousy situations and then tell yourself, life's very hard.
Look, Susan...
No, I'm going to tell you this. You think you've done something honourable and loyal? Well, you haven't. You've just done what was the easiest thing.
You're talking bunkum.
It's true. You won't face things. Not real things. You just work on little easy ones. When it gets difficult, you run away.
Will you shut up, you little slut?
It's true.
I happen to care about the quality of the work the place does.
And you think it'll do better work with Waring running Brian than with you running him?
That isn't the point.
But it is the point. Oh, Sammy, you're such a fool. Oh, Pam.
Oh, pull yourself together, Susan. You're making an ass of yourself. She sat there raking in her bag for a moment and then suddenly got up and went. She didn't come back. So I got my hat and started for home. As I passed the Royal, I looked through the glass doors of the big downstairs bar. Waring and Pinker were there all right. They looked very much together. When you came to think of it, they were made for one another. When I got back to the flat, Susan was sitting looking into the fire.
Hello.
Well, that was a pretty performance, my dear.
Yes. I'm sorry.
You know, if you really think I'm such a poor sap, you'd better leave me.
That had occurred to me.
Oh! Well, what did you decide?
I can't make up my mind whether I do you more harm than good by being here.
I hadn't realized you thought of yourself as a sort of charity.
Oh, darling, don't let's be proud. It's so difficult if everybody's proud. The reason why I stay here is because I want to.
What in heaven's name's got into you?
I may have put it in an irritating way, but what I said tonight was true, you know.
I hope you're not going to say it all over again.
Look, Sammy, it's like this. You've got to make up your mind whether you want to spend your whole life being a person it's too bad about or not.
I don't like it, you know.
No, you hate it. I know that. That's why I wish you'd try harder. Oh, I don't know what I mean.
No, you don't. It's far better if you kept your mouth shut.
Perhaps, but I doubt it. Darling, you must go to bed. You'll be dog tired tomorrow. It's all right, really, you know.
It isn't all right. It's all wrong.
Darling, don't. It's all right. No one shall make you.
Listen, how much of this sort of thing can you stand?
As much as you like.
Well, I don't like... Something's got to be done.
All right. But not tonight.
All right, not tonight. But soon. On the following Monday, Mayor sent for me. He looked very cheerful and about 10 years younger. And for a moment, I thought perhaps they'd asked him to stay after all. But,
I shall be leaving the section in about a week's time. They're putting in Brian in my place. You know, the big fellow who looks as though he doesn't shave.
Oh.
Yeah. Don't you like the sound of it?
Well, frankly, I think it sounds perfectly awful.
Oh, now, you mustn't think that. The main thing is that the work must go on. That's what I wanted to talk to you about. We've been a good team and done some good work, and I don't want my gang to hinder that work in any way. Now,
I've seen Brian, and I've told him he can rely on you completely. He doesn't know much about it, of course, Sammy. And I've told him he'll need to lean on you pretty heavily.
That's very kind of you, sir.
Ah, now, he's not a bad chap, but limited, as these chemists always are. Anyhow, I've done my best. It'll be up to Brian and Easton what the section does now. Oh, I expect they'll have to muck it about a bit, you know, just to show they're in charge. But I don't suppose they'll stop any of the stuff that's actually running. Well, there you are, Sammy. That's all. Do all you can to help Brian, but remember, don't get mixed up in the political stuff. Never did anybody any good. Leave that to us old chaps who are no longer fit for an honest job of work.
The old man went at the end of the week. For the first day or two, Brian spent all his time with Waring. Through Waring, he asked us to draw up a list of the jobs we had on hand. I rather expected that at some point he'd call me in to talk about the work, but he didn't. On Thursday, the fun began bright and early when Waring rang up and said the director wanted all of us at once. We trooped down to his room. I glanced at Joe and Tilly and hoped I didn't look as scruffy as they did. And Joe looked like an untidy 13-year-old, and Tilly was doing his ugly man in a fair act. Waring was sitting beside Brian, who rubbed the bluest bit of his chin and said,
"Well, gentlemen, I've now had a chance to look through this list of your activities. You'll forgive me for saying that it's not a very coherent picture."
"I think we all felt the list was a bit scrappy, sir, but it isn't easy stuff to get done."
"Oh, quiet, I'm not complaining about the document. If it's scrappy, it's because the work is scrappy. Now, I've been through this with Mr. Waring and marked the things which I want you to concentrate on, and I want it to be clearly understood that no time is to be spent on anything else without direct permission from me, or, of course, in my absence, from Mr. Waring."
"Oh, my God."
"Mr. Waring is to act for you in technical matters."
"Of course. As my deputy, he will be in control in my absence."
"I see." "We hadn't actually heard of the appointment."
"Well, that will be the arrangement."
"May I see which items you've selected to carry on with?"
"Oh, yes, if you want to."
"Are we to drop all the invention stuff, sir?"
"Certainly. I can't conceive why it was ever started."
"Oh."
I was looking at the list. It was heartbreaking. He'd cut out all the fuse stuff, all the radio, everything where we'd ever done any good. "What are we to do about the jobs in hand? The Reeves gun, for example."
"The Reeves development's been discontinued."
"I see. I think I ought to tell you that the things you've left on the list won't keep us employed for more than 2 days a week."
"Ah, that's what I was waiting for you to say, because now I've got some work that does need doing. First of all, the effect of hydrogen iron concentration in quenching fluids in the hardening of molybdenum and tungsten steels. How about that one?"
"Well, of course, none of us..."
"Oh, no, not you. Someone else for a change. You, Till."
Tilly sat up with such a jerk that his glasses nearly came off.
"Not an easy one, is it?"
Far from it, sir."
I didn't suppose for a moment that Tilly knew what hydrogen iron concentration meant.
"Ah, then. Yes. Now, this is a real beauty for somebody. The stability of the ring structure of organic vesicles. I think we may probably have to get somebody in to tackle that. There's a student of mine who's been working right next door to it. Number three..."
He went on like that through six items. All of them but one were chemical, and the other was straight crystallography. Finally, he gave Tilly another snorter to think about and dismissed us. I gather he thought that Tilly was the side's real research man. As we came out, he called Joe back. Tilly and I went upstairs in silence. When we got to our room, Tilly began to laugh. He very seldom laughed. It was a peculiar affair, in which he didn't smile, but just opened his mouth and made a clucking noise. "Look, he doesn't understand the position at all. He's thinking of a university department with people working for PhDs.
"Well, you can't blame him. He said he'd agreed it with his deputy, Mr. Waring. I don't think life's going to be very pleasant round here for a while. I wonder what he wanted Joe for."
"Hey, I've been chucked out."
"What?"
"I've been sacked. He's just told me, the big swine."
"Oh, Joe, I'm sorry, old boy."
"What am I to do, Sammy? I can't go home and tell Madeline. If I can't get another job, They'll call me up.
I went home about 6:30. There was a telegram in the letterbox. It didn't say Dick had been killed in action, just that he'd lost his life while employed in special operations. There was also a note from Susan on the table which said, "Hope you had a nice evening. Now go straight to bed, darling. Good night. See you tomorrow." I got out the whiskey, but the taste of it nearly made me sick. I sat down and tried to think. What shook me was that I couldn't keep my mind on Dick's death. As soon as I started to think about him, I switched over to Brian and Waring and Lord knows what. I made another effort, and I remembered that I must send Dick's letter to his girl. I got up to get it, and then the telephone rang. The chap at the other end had to say his name 3 times over before I realized it was Stuart.
"I've got one, old boy."
"What?"
"I've got one, old boy."
"Good Lord, have you?"
"Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've got 2. Undamaged and in good condition."
"Where?"
"Well, I'm at Luggenporth. They're down on the sand."
"You've seen them?"
"Well, I've taken a fairly respectful sort of look."
"Are they like we thought?"
"Well, fairly. Bit bigger. We were 100% wrong about one thing, though."
"What?"
"Tick tock, tick tock."
"Are you sure?"
"Oh, yes. Heard it myself. Now, look, old boy, I take it you want to be in on this."
"Yes, of course I do."
"Right. Then this is the idea. Now, I shall have a go, and if I make a pig's ear, you'll know some of the things not to do with the other. Agree?"
"Look, wait till I get down."
"Well, I'll see that absolutely everything's recorded."
"No, I'd much rather you wait till I got there."
"Yes, but we can't do a joint thing, old boy, or if it goes wrong, there won't be anybody to cope with the other one."
"Look, for goodness sake, wait. I've got a lot of things to suggest."
"Yeah, well, fine. You can try them on 2. Number 1's mine." "Well, hang it, man. I found it."
"Look, be careful, Stuart, for God's sake."
"Oh, laddie, I promise to be so careful it'll hurt. I'll see you tomorrow. Cheerio till then."
"Good luck." I looked up a train and chucked some things into a bag ready for the morning. And then, very suddenly, it went bad on me. I kept thinking he'll kill himself. And then I shall have to tackle it alone. I looked down and saw my foot, and thought that I shouldn't be able to wear it because it was metal. I wondered for a moment whether that'd get me out of it. And then it occurred to me that if I told Brian, he'd stop me. I wanted somebody not to let me do it. That was what I wanted. I must have gone on sitting there for over an hour, sweating and shaking. I could see the thing lying on the sand, looking small and quite harmless, ready to go off. And I knew I should never be able to touch it. It was still pretty bad the next morning. I left a note for Susan. I wrote, "A lot of things have happened. Dick's been killed. Stuart's got 2 of his things, and I've gone down to help him. It seems to me if I get blown up, that might be quite a good thing. And anyhow, it'll put me alongside Dick, which is good enough for anybody. Anyhow, I love you. I am frightened, but not as much as I thought. I did have a drink last night, but only 1. Goodbye, pet. Sammy." I wasn't quite satisfied with it, but it was time to go for my train, so I just wrote underneath, "You can say what you like, but this is quite a difficult thing, and if I do it, I shall probably be quite different and bully everybody." At Luggenporth, there was a sapper lieutenant on the platform.
"My name's Pearson, sir. I have a car for you."
"Has Captain Stuart done anything yet?"
"Why, rotten business."
"Is he dead?"
"Aye. Killed instantly."
"Oh, Lord. He was a good chap."
"Aye. He had guts."
The CO was a tall chap of about 45 with a face like a prize fighter and rather incongruous baby blue eyes.
"Oh, here you are. How do you do?"
"How do you do?"
"My name's Strang. You've been told what happened?"
"Yes."
"They're transcribing his shorthand notes now."
"But did he have somebody making notes then?"
"He had a field telephone."
"Oh, yes, of course."
"Now, strictly speaking, Dick Stuart had no right to bring you in, even though you are a fuse expert." Oh, not that it matters, but it puts me in rather a spot. Well, of course, we've got plenty of people who are only too keen to hit the thing a few good clips with a hammer and a cold chisel, but it isn't quite that sort of job.
I did have a fairly definite plan mapped out with Stuart. I think if I could see his notes, I could probably, I should probably be all right.
Oh, I'm not worrying about you, old boy. But if I let you do it and you blow yourself up, what's your family going to say to me and your boss?
I haven't got a family, and Professor Mayer knows all about it.
Oh, I see. Well, I'll have to talk to my master, but you think on the whole you stand a better chance of getting away with it than any of my boys?
Yes.
Right. Well, then, I shall get through to my master and tell him the situation, and that on the whole I think we ought to accept your offer. With great gratitude, I may say.
They brought in Stuart's notebooks. It was odd to read the bit about meeting me. He'd made it read as though I'd done a lot more than I had. And then I looked at the photographs. The things were much as I'd thought of them, a thickish cylinder with a cap on the end, not unlike some incendiaries. And I turned to the shorthand transcript. It was a queer mix-up of what had come over the telephone with the shorthand writer's own notes.
4:645 hours. Wire tested and found in order. Captain S went out and got into slip trench. 0647.
Well, here we are at Wembley. It's a lovely day with a slight breeze blowing from the pavilion in. Must be quite 100,000 people here. King hasn't come yet.
0648.
I'm putting the reaching rods together and baiting the hook with a large spanner.
Captain S is humming. Sergeant Groves has the glasses and reports he's fitting the joints. One won't go in. 0651. It has gone in now.
Well, here we go.
Sergeant Groves reports Captain S bringing spanner over object. Says something, can't catch it. 0653.
Well, it won't rise to a spanner.
Sergeant Groves reports fitting shade to rod. 0656.
And no go. Isn't interested in that either. How about the warm tube?
0659.
I nearly poked the wretched thing then. Anyhow, it doesn't seem to mind the warmth. And now I suppose I shall have to get out of this nice safe hole.
0700. Captain S out of trench. 0703, Captain S now near object, kneeling down. Sergeant Grove says his head's right down listening.
Glory be, it stopped.
0704.
So, the fuse has either missed or is now fully set.
0708. Sergeant Groves reports working with wrench.
Now, I am going to work the sand away from under the cap end so that I can get at it with the other wrench.
0729.
I think that's all right. Oh, Lord, this is where I need three hands. I shan't be able to tighten the wrench up.
Then there was a detailed and quite hair-raising account of how he got the second wrench onto the cap.
0742.
Well, that went on quite nicely. I'm now going to try to unscrew the cap with the wrench in my right hand, holding it steady with the wrench in my left.
0754.
I have the cap off. Now, I get this. I'll say it slowly. The cap screws off anti-clockwise on about 6 brass threads. Clock mechanism is in the cap. Straightforward trembler mechanism in the top of the body. Oh, I see. Wait a minute. Before I go any further, I'm going to earth the trembler. Hang on.
Sergeant Groves reports Captain S working. 0804.
Well, unless the electricity they taught me is all wrong, it ought to be hunky-dory. I think I'd better just
tremble the trembler to see. Yes. That seems okay. Well, boys, unless there's a very small man inside with a lighted match or something, I think that's probably all right. There'll be special matinees this week on Wednesdays and Fridays. Just let me have one more look. Hello? What's this hole?
0809.
No. Positively no deception. I don't see why they wanted such a long lead on the insulators, but they probably...
At this point, 0810 hours, the explosion occurred, and the transmitter was destroyed. Sergeant Groves, who was watching through the glasses, reports that at the time, Captain S was kneeling upright with the cap in his hands.
Are you ready for a cup of tea? Well, what do you make of it?
Well, it looks as if either he hadn't earthed the trembler properly, or else there's another fuse of some sort that he missed.
You don't think there can be a charge in the cap itself?
No, I shouldn't think so.
Have you got a program worked out?
Well, more or less. I shall do exactly what Stuart did up to getting the cap off. Mm. Except that I shan't use a wrench to hold it. I want both hands free.
Well, what will you use?
Clamps, if you can get them. Yeah. You know, the sort of things you use in a lab.
Oh, yes, I think we can get hold of something. When do you want to tackle it?
Well, as soon as possible.
I doubt if we can get clamps before the light goes. That means leaving it till tomorrow morning. Is that all right with you?
Yes. I woke up at about 5 o'clock. As soon as it was light, Strang took me to have a look at the clamps and the other stuff. The reaching things were just like stiff fishing rods. I thought one joint would do as a walking stick if I had my foot off.
How do you feel about getting the stuff into the car and going down it?
Strang took the car across the sand to a knot of people standing round a table with the field telephone on it. There was a red marker flag fluttering in the sand about a couple of 100 yards away. It looks like a golf hole.
Huh? Oh, yes. They're just going to try the line, and they were all set. Well, old man, how do you feel?
Oh, quite all right.
Good. Well, now, take it easy and stop for a rest if you feel you're tiring. There's plenty of time in it.
I wish I'd got some different clothes.
Oh, yes, I brought some shorts and a vest.
Ah.
Well, you can't possibly work with trousers flapping about. You can use the car as a bathing machine, if you like.
I went behind the car and undressed, remembering Stuart's tip and keeping my handkerchief. My garters looked pretty silly, so I took them off. My socks covered the attachment of my foot all right.
All fixed?
Yes. The sergeant came up and put the telephone harness on. Right. I'll take the bag now.
Can you manage?
Yes, easy.
Well, good luck, boy. Good luck.
As long as Strang had been there, I think I'd been worrying more about what I looked like. But now that he'd gone, and the thing was lying there, only about 50 yards away, I began to be scared stiff. The trench was only a scraping in the sand and not very deep, and the thing was only the width of a room away. I was panting as though I'd been running hard. I thought, if I'm going to make this fuss about just coming within yards of the thing, what'll it be like later? I said into the telephone, "The object is about 10 yards away. It looks exactly like the photographs of the other one, but I shall try it quickly for metal and shading and warmth, just to be sure." My hands were shaking so that it was some time before I could get the joints together. I fixed one of the wrenches in the clip at the end. It seemed quite safe. "I am now going to try it for metal." I was feeling a lot better now, and I got through dangling the wrench round it and then trying it with shade quite easily. After that, I thought for a bit about the heat thing. I decided simply to go through the motions. I just held the pad well away from the thing and reported no reaction. It was only when I'd pulled the rod in and taken it to pieces that I realized that I'd burnt my boats. If it had gone up while I was in the trench, that would have let me out. There wasn't another one to try, and everyone would have thought it was just an accident. I remember being very angry with myself. And then, being quite glad. In fact, I found I didn't much mind the idea of getting out and tackling it. I checked that it wasn't ticking, and then got the clamps and wrenches out, and sat on the sand beside it, and thought it over. My general idea is to get the jaws of the clamps holding it firmly, and then to scrape away the sand so that I can get at it all round. Because I reckon that if there's a second fuse, Stuart may have missed it through not being able to see the underneath part. I'm starting the first clamp. Even after Stuart's notes, I had no idea how tricky this part was going to be. As soon as I pressed, the sand started to fall away, and I thought the whole thing was going to move. When I did get the jaws over it, I was sweating like a pig, and it kept running into my eyes and smarting so that I was afraid I shouldn't be able to see properly and should do something silly. I sat back and rubbed my eyes with my handkerchief. I want to be certain that the jaws are properly centered so that it doesn't move when I tighten it. Oh, hell, the clamp wants to be about half an inch further over. Oh, God! I'd forgotten that the base was right against the bomb. I jerked away from it in a silly way, but nothing happened. It only moved a fraction of an inch, but it scared me sick. I tried to go on, but my hands were shaking too much, so I just sat back and rested. I've now got the jaws of the first clamp on. I just hit it a good clout with the base of the clamp and made it roll about a bit, but nothing happened. Now I'm going to tighten the jaws. As they're coming together, the far one's going to grip just a fraction before the other, but the clamp won't go any closer without pushing the bomb again. It's only a fraction. I think the only thing to do is to chance it. Yes, one jaw's touching the side. Here goes. They're both gripping. I could work more freely now one end was firmly held. Still, it took quite a time. Ah, that's all right. And now I'm going to scrape the sand away so that the thing's clear. Oh, no, I'm not. No, it's too apt to trickle away under the base of the clamp. Still, I think I can manage. And like a fool, instead of resting again, I went straight on with getting the cap off. Now, I shall have to use two wrenches, as Stuart did, one to hold the body and the other to undo the cap. I got the wrenches on all right. The clamps made it easier. And now for it. I'm going to turn the cap. Oh. That doesn't shift. Oh, it's a reverse thread. I'm trying it the other way now. Oh. One more. Oh. I can't shift it. That shook me. If I couldn't get that cap off, it would all have been for nothing. I started to heave again with all my might. I must have shaken the thing quite a lot, though the clamps held it well. The sweat was pouring off me, and I could hear myself panting loudly. When I looked up, everything looked a curious green. I put my head down and shut my eyes. I thought, I shall never shift it now. I knew that gutless feeling of old. When I opened my eyes again, things had gone back to their normal color. I took hold of the wrench again and gave it a terrific heave. And this time it moved quite easily. Probably I'd started it before, really. I took it off and sat back with it in my hand and panted. It's off now. I'm sorry to leave you for so long. I had to think things out a bit. Oh, yes, Stuart was right. The clock mechanism's in the head. Yeah, there's the lead coming out of it with two insulators. Now, let's look at the body. Yes, there's a brass trembler tongue lying between terminals. It's about a quarter of an inch movement either way. I thought the first thing to do is to earth those terminals. But I can't do it. My hands are too shaky. Look, I'm going to rest again. But after a bit, it gradually dawned on me that earthing wasn't really very tricky. As long as I didn't get the wire across both the terminal and the trembler, it would be all right, even if my hands did shake. Well, if I'd been fresh, I could have done it in half a minute. But as it was, it took me a long time. But it was only tedious, not particularly dangerous. I think that was the first time I began to feel that I might beat the thing after all. They're earthed now. Well, this is where it went wrong on Stuart. The hole that he talked about runs down into the body, and hanging from the caps, the lead for the clock, that he said seemed too long. Yes, it's about 4 inches. But when the cap's on, the distance from the trembler to the clock must be very small. This lead must run through the hole down into the body to a second fuse. So there should be a lead to the top trembler. I'm going to have a look at the cap. I can't see any.
Yes, I've got it.
The lead Stuart found is to a second fuse. The one to the top trembler winds right up into the clock, and he didn't notice it. I can just see the ends of the insulators. I'm going to look for a way in on the body. Because if there isn't one, then they must put the fuse in before the charge, and the charge may lift up. Hello, there is a way in. Oh, at least I think so. Yes, the cylinder's varnished, but when you scrape the varnish away, about 3 inches from the non-cap end, there's what looks like a joint. Yes. Yes. What it comes to is that there's a cap on both ends, only one's obvious and the other isn't. I'm now going to try to unscrew the second cap. Oh, no, wait a minute. Now, look here. If the second trembler's in the body, then it'll be all right to unscrew the lower cap. But if the second trembler's in the cap, then unscrewing will send the whole thing up. Hang on a minute while I try to decide whether to hold the body still and unscrew the cap, or hold the cap still and unscrew the body. I must have been getting pretty queer, because I remember hearing myself make odd moaning noises. I think it was the disappointment of realizing that I still wasn't out of the wood, and a silly feeling that it wasn't fair that I should have to deal with this after beating the other end. I sat there for a bit, just staring at the thing hopelessly. It wasn't till I picked the top cap up again that I remembered. I just measured the lead against the body. Assuming the long lead is wound up the same distance, it must have been only 7 inches long originally. It couldn't have reached down to the bottom cap, so it's in the body. Now I've got to loosen the lower cap. Oh. But it stuck. Just as the other had done. And that finished me. And if I'd been fresh, I dare say one big heave would have done it. But my hand and arm muscles were all to hell, and instead of giving one big heave, I had to keep giving a series of little tugs. After the first few goes, I knew I should never shift it. And if I'd had any sense, I should have stopped and rested, but I just went on, jerking at the damned wrench, never even believing that it was going to move. I don't know how long this went on, or why I didn't shake the thing so much that it went up. Finally, my hand slipped off the wrench, and I half fell backwards and just lay there, sobbing and panting. I heard somebody call, and saw something misty about 10 feet away. I blinked my eyes clear. It was Strang. Keep away, for God's sake! There's one not done.
Easy does it, old man. Now then, what's wrong?
The damn thing's stuck.
Oh, that's all right. Let me have a go. You want that turn, do you?
All right, you do it.
In case I put my big feet into this, you'd better get into the trench, old man. You've done your share.
Now, why the hell should I?
You're all right, all right. Now, here goes. That's shifted it. Now, once again. And once more. Yes, that's got him. Now, you tell me what to do, Squire. It's your party.
I've come out of the way. I can do it now. Yes. There's the trembler. Under the wire, please.
Here you are. You're earthing it, are you?
I'm trying to.
Can you manage, or shall I?
No, I can do it. When it was on, I sat back and looked at it.
And now what?
Get your people and steam the charge out.
And that's that?
That's all.
Yeah, come on. Come on. Let me help you up.
He put his hands under my armpits and put me on my feet as though I weighed 6 ounces.
Now, look, why should we carry all this stuff back? If you sit down for a moment, I'll go and get the car.
And he started off, running along the beach. He ran beautifully, as though running were one of his things. I went over very slowly and sat down on a sandhill. I looked back at the thing lying there with the caps off, and I thought, I shall never be able to pay more than that for anything. And even that wasn't enough. There was a train back to town just after lunch. I was dog-tired, but I had to get away from it quickly. And anyhow, I knew Susan would be worried. It would have been easier if Strang hadn't been so good about it. He'd seen me lying on the sand, and he knew, I knew, that he never so much as flickered an eyebrow. I might have been the toughest thing on earth. He came to the station to see me off.
Well, goodbye, old man. Have a sleep in the train. You've earned it if anybody ever did.
Look, Strang, I could have shifted it if I'd been fresh. It was the first one sticking that did me.
Well, of course you could. Hang it, you'd been working for an hour and a half. I don't see how on earth you stuck it.
See, my hands and arms are very strong, but if I'd had the sense to rest...
Get on with you, old man. If anybody ever doubts what you can do with your hands, or your arms, or any other bit of you, you send them along to me.
I knew it was no good. He'd made up his mind, and nothing I could say would now alter it. As the train started, I waved my hand. Strang pulled himself up and saluted. I thought if only I'd messed it up in a different way and killed myself, he could have done that and meant it. It was 7:30 when I got to the office. There was no light in Susan's room, and Waring had got a card on his door saying, Deputy Director. Oh, that seemed an awfully long way away. It suddenly struck me that I could ring Susan up.
Hello?
Sue, I thought I'd just tell you I'm all right.
Oh, darling. Really all right?
Yes.
And the thing, did you do it?
Yeah, more or less. Anyhow, it's done.
Oh, Sammy, darling. Come home right away. Get a cab.
Yeah, in a minute. I've got something to get straight. But I'll be with you within 30 minutes.
Look, you really are all right, are you? Wouldn't you like me to come and fetch you?
No, I'm quite all right. I'll see you in a minute, When I came out, it was just beginning to get dark. There was a cold wind blowing, and the park was very empty. I sat down on a bench and tried to figure it out. The facts were that Dick was dead, and Stuart was dead, and the old man was gone, and Waring was deputy director, and I was just where I'd always been. The good chaps went and were killed, and the crooks got away with it, but I just stayed put. The moon was just going down behind a tree. I decided that when it disappeared, I'd go home. I knew there was no answer. If I'd been a bit sillier, or a bit more intelligent, or had more guts, or less guts, or had 2 feet, or no feet, or been almost anything definite, it would have been easy, but as it was, I didn't like what I was and couldn't be what I liked, and it would always be that way. I thought, well, I'll go home now and hand over to Susan. And she'll take it and make it into what she wants, just to strangle it. We shall all know, but I'm the only one who'll mind. I laughed to myself and said, I did it, darling, all by myself. Except for a half turn with a wrench. What's that among friends? There was still a rim of moon showing, but I was cold, and I wanted Susan. So I didn't wait for it.
You've been listening to Alec McCarran as Sammy Rice and Isabel Black as Susan in The Small Back Room, adapted for radio by Peter Watts from the novel by Nigel Balchin. As Captain Stewart, you heard Nigel Anthony, R.B. Waring, John Bentley, Pinker, Frederick Treves, Colonel Strang, Victor Lucas, Professor Mayer, Charles Simon, Professor Brine, Godfrey Kenton, Dick Rice, Geoffrey Collins, Easton, John Gabriel, Gladwin, Peter Williams, and Colonel Holland, Hector Ross. Other parts were played by Jan Edwards, Alwyn Griffiths, Nigel Lambert, and Bill Lyons. The production was by Roger Pine.